FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Peter Jones, and you are indeed listening to Tell Us a Tale, where Jen Hoffman and I are going to tell you a couple of tales about bragging just a little bit too much. We'll start with one from Norway called The Man Who Kept House, adapted by Kathleen and Michael Haig, and that's published by Harcourt Race Jovanovic.
Were there ever any who worked as hard and long as the women of the house? Perhaps, perhaps not. This is the story of one peevish man who was convinced that his wife had too little to do. He came home daily from the fields, telling anyone who would listen how hard he had toiled, while his wife only puttered about the house all day, breaking her leisure just long enough to fix his humble supper. One particular evening he arrived home in a very foul mood, scornful because his supper was not yet on the table.
Were I to spend the whole of my day doing nothing more than a few meager chores, I could surely have a hot meal ready for my hard-working husband.
Oh, don't go on so. If you like, we'll change jobs tomorrow. I'll mow hay in the fields, and you can do the housework.
I love that idea. The experience would teach you what work is.
Okay, we'll try.
Well, before dawn, the wife arose and made ready for her day in the fields. She tied her hair back, packed lunch, shouldered her husband's scythe, and set out. The man also rose early and went about the house, reading his carefully written list of chores.
If only women could be this organized, what a better place the whole world would be.
He sang as he washed the morning dishes until one of the plates slipped from his hand and broke on the floor with a crash. This woke the baby, who made an even louder noise, demanding something to eat. Leaving the dirty dishes, the man got breakfast ready for the child. And after a few mouthfuls had been gobbled up, the baby began to flip the oatmeal skyward with his spoon. In graceful arcs, it flew and landed on the ceiling.
Thank you very much. Now are you happy, baby? Look at the mess you've made for me. You would never do this if your mother were home.
He took the bowl and put it in the sink. Then he wiped away the oatmeal, except for those lumps highest on the ceiling.
My wife won't even notice that, and I'll just bury the broken dish in the yard.
Now the man went into the bedroom to make up the beds.
Now just watch me, and I'll show you how skillfully beds can be made. First I smooth the sheets and the blankets, and then I plump up the pillows.
The baby clapped approvingly.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much.
And the man picked up the child. Well, quickly his smile disappeared when he found that the baby had soiled the bed, and with a sigh, he changed the baby's diaper.
Oh.
Then he took the sheets off the bed and carried the dirty laundry out to wash in a tub in the yard. He scrubbed the sheets and diapers vigorously, and when they were clean, he rinsed and shook them out and began to hang them on the line to dry. Suddenly, the sound of squealing and laughter filled his ears. The baby and the pig had tumbled into the tub.
Oh, no!
And he rushed to save them both from drowning. Meanwhile, the sheets flapped in the breeze, slid to the ground, and danced with the wind in the mud. Grimly, the man retrieved them and took them back for another round of scrubbing. This time, he tethered the baby to a tree and put the pig in its pen. Soon the sheets were white again and hung gaily on the line, secured with 20 clothespins.
That'll hold them.
It was long past lunchtime now, and inside the house, the man and child shared a meal of bread, cheese, and milk. Then the man rocked the child to sleep and gently laid him in the kitchen cradle to nap.
At last. Now I can get some work done.
He washed the dirty dishes and then remembered he would have to churn some butter for dinner. He got out the churn and put in the cream, and after churning a while, he felt quite thirsty.
There'd be no harm in having a nice bit of lemonade.
He was in the cellar, tapping the lemonade, when he heard a great commotion above.
Now what?
He rushed up the stairs and found the room in absolute chaos. Bowls and spoons, table and chairs were flying through the air as the goat ran bleeding from one end of the room to the other, trying to find its way outside again. He dispatched the goat and stared in disbelief at the room. The churn was overturned, and its contents were being noisily consumed by the pig, who had escaped his pen and entered with the goat. The baby had awakened and found pulling the tail of the cat most amusing, and the cat, in trying to escape through the window, knocked the newly washed dishes to the floor. Panicked by the shouts from his master and the crash of the falling dishes, the pig turned and ran headfirst into the wall. The man stared at the tap still in his hand and rushed down the stairs to find the cellar floor awash with lemonade and the barrel completely dry. In a daze, he climbed the stairs again. Opening the kitchen door, he gasped,
"Oh, no, my wife, she's going to be home any minute."
Frantically, he picked up the broken dishes, set up the table, chairs, and churn, and mopped up the floor. Taking no chances on further disaster, he tied the baby in his chair.
Stay there, don't move.
Carrying out the unfortunate pig, he remembered that the cow had spent the day in the barn with nothing to eat. Since it was too late to take her to the pasture, he put her to graze on the roof, for they had a turf roof of thick green grass. Then it crossed his mind that the cow might fall off, so he looped one end of a rope around her head and slipped the other end down the chimney. Back inside, he tied the other end of the rope around his leg.
Do you see how clever your father is?
He boasted this to the baby while hanging a pot of water over the hearth to boil for soup.
Now if the cow moves too far, I can feel her tug at the rope on my leg. Your mother would never think of such a thing.
Just then, the cow did fall off the roof. But instead of a gentle tug, there was a tremendous yank, and the man was pulled halfway up the chimney, his head hanging inches above the pot of water.
Help!
The man struggled, but to no avail. The baby applauded his father's acrobatics, and the cow moaned. The wife, having worked in the fields all day, admitted that it was indeed hard work and started for home. catching sight of the house from a distance, she thought it strange to see no lights coming from the windows, so she quickened her pace. Arriving at the house, her mouth fell open when she saw the unhappy cow dangling from the roof. What calamity is this? And she cut the cow down with the scythe. A great splash came from within, and she rushed inside to find the baby tied to his chair and in the hearth, her husband with his head in the pot. The wife asked no questions, and the husband made no comments about the day's events. But from that day on, nothing but praise ever passed the man's lips in speaking of his wife, and his courtesy to the women of the town was noticed by all.
From the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, that was R-E-S-P-E-C-T, Respect. You're listening to Tell Us a Tale.
This is Bird Note. During her first year at the Yale School of Architecture, Kenyan graduate student Barbara Nasila was tasked to design a hypothetical outdoor pavilion in a local neighborhood called Dixwell, with an original copy of The Enslaver, John James Audubon's book, The Birds of America, as its centerpiece. It's a book so large that its pages are only turned once a year.
I picked the Dixwell site because I personally am more focused on designing for Black and brown communities. It's an opportunity to kind of work with people that in some level look like me and feel like me.
Barbara got to work learning about the Dixwell community, both its history and its local bird life.
And what I found in that discovery process is that there is already an existing conversation about birds and engaging birds into kind of our urban living experience. I thought about my role in this project as more about amplifying existing voices and existing ideas about the environment, about nature, about people really living with and within nature.
She designed an entire urban oasis featuring a pond surrounded by trees, with space for local community groups to host events. But she left out one particular thing.
I didn't feel like Audubon himself would have cared about the goals of this pavilion, and therefore I chose not to create a space for the book in this project, instead create a space for the birds themselves.
Check out the full interview and see Barbara's design at birdnote.org. I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin.
We are telling you some stories about bragging just a little bit too much in this half hour. And this next one is an Appalachian Jack tale called Fearless Jack, adapted by Paul Brett Johnson, and that's published by Margaret K. Elderberry Books. And then to close out this edition of Tell Us a Tale, we'll listen to Lori Lewis and Dan Rosum singing Old Dan Tucker off their album Guest House.
Back some time ago, when folks still had to worry about giants and wild unicorns and such, there was an old woman and her son, Jack. Well, Jack had two older brothers, but they were off seeking their fortune, and that left young Jack to take care of their ma. Well, it got to where they were down to nothing but a penny in a pot, so Jack's ma said,
Jack, honey, oughtn't you go find a job of work before we starve to death?
Oh, wow.
So Jack's ma took the last biscuit in the house and the last little dab of sour gum, packed a sandwich for Jack, and sent him on his way.
Ooh-wee, I'm gonna eat that soon.
Well, Jack walked up a few hills and down a few hills till his belly started to rile him. He found a big rock and sat down on it to eat. Well, pretty soon, here come a yellow jacket and another.
Who invite all you to this here picnic? Get out of here. Get out of here, bees. Get out of here. Don't bother me.
And he whooshed his hands back and forth trying to drive off them pesky bees, but it didn't do a bit of good. Before he knew it, there was a whole swarm of yellow jackets buzzing over that sandwich. Well, Jack, he got real mad. Real mad. And he took off his bill cap, brung it down with a mighty... Jack started picking dead yellow jackets out of his sandwich.
One, two... 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Not bad. 10 at a whack. 10 at a whack.
Well, with that, he whittled a little pointy stick and dipped it in some pokeberry juice and wrote on his bill cap.
Fearless Jack killed 10 at a whack. Yes, indeed.
And then he finished his flattened out sandwich and went on down the road.
I think I missed one of those bees. Yeah.
And after a while, Jack came to a town. It looked just like a ghost town. Wasn't nobody stirring. It was hushed up as a graveyard. And all of a sudden, here comes something tearing down the street like a hane in a whirlwind. Well, Jack dove for cover in the nick of time, but not before catching a whiff of the rottenest breath he'd ever smelled.
Where are my brothers? I know they stink. They must be around here somewhere. What in tarnation is that?
In a few minutes, little old lady poked her head out of the door. You still drawing air, son?
Why, sure I am, ma'am. Who are
son,
you anyway?
Well, I'm the mayor of these here parts. And who might you be?
Well, the name's Jack, ma'am.
Let me take a look at that bill cap of yours, son. Says there you killed 10 at a whack.
Yes, indeed. I sure did.
Well, you don't look like much. You sure it was 10 that you killed? All at one blow?
Yep, I killed me 10, all right. Of course, I'm not going to tell you what I killed 10 of.
Well, son, if you speak in gospel, though I kindly doubt it, then you're in the right place.
Why's that?
Well, we got ourselves some wild varmints around here. They've been terrorizing this whole county, killing livestock, thrashing crops. Why, Jack, folks are scared to come outdoors.
Well, now, no wonder. I hear that. Stink, man. What a stink that was.
That's right, Jack. That's one of them there varmints. In fact is, there is a big reward for the capture of them varmints.
Okay.
But I gotta warn you. Plenty of braggy britches just like you have had their go, and nary one of them has been heard from since.
Mm-hmm.
But, the way I figure it, Jackie... Anybody that killed 10 men at one whack can surely get shed of a few critters.
Mayor, how much of a reward are we talking about here?
Why, $100 cash money.
Woo-wee! $100? I can do a lot with $100.
Well, Jack figured $100 ought to take care of his ma for a while, but he knew right well that there was a big difference between yellow jackets and wild varmints. So all Jack said was,
Well, Mayor, I'll see what I can do.
And Jack went on his way.
No way I'm going to go after them varmints. That's too much for me. I'm just going to go off to the next town and see what I can rustle up for some real work. I ain't going to go near any of those varmints the mayor's been talking about. No way. That other job, it may not pay as good, but sure to be a little safer. And I can get home tomorrow, too.
Well, no sooner had Jack got out of town than he heard a frightful snorting and snuffing. He looked around, and here come the biggest, most ferocious wild boar he had ever seen. Jack flew whippity-split down the hollow with that monster hog slicing at the seat of his britches. Well, Jack was in luck. He spied an empty corn crib and headed straight for it. He ran inside and climbed up to the top, and that old boar was right behind him, but it couldn't climb. So it just reared up and started gnashing and slashing, trying to get at Jack. Well, Jack slipped on over the top and down the outside of the corn crib. He ran back around to the door, slammed it shut, and wedged it tight. Well, when the old boar figured out what had happened, it took a conniption fit. It charged the door, but the door held. Well, Jack went back to town, strutting and whistling.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Jack, my boy, did you see any of them there varmints?
Well, Mayor, I don't know if it counts, but I did come across a little pig show. Right cute little rooter, too. But it got to pestering me. So I grabbed a hold of the tail, and I slung it into a corn crib. You might ought to take a look, though, just to make sure it ain't one of them varmints.
And when she saw that the ball all panned up, the sheriff's eyes got big as dinner plates. Well there, Felix Jack. I think I misjudged you. Didn't really take you for such a mighty hunter, scrap of a lad like you is.
Don't base everything on appearances there, Mayor.
Well, Jack, here's your $100.
I'll take it.
Before you go, boy, there's another $100 if you can get rid of a nasty grizzly bear that's been plundering the farms around here. What do you think of that?
Well, Mayor, a bear, huh? I'll see what I can do, just like I was going to do for that pig, too. I'll be on my way, though. I'll see what I can find.
All right.
I ain't gonna mess with no grizzly bear. I'll get myself mauled to death. Besides, $100 is plenty enough to see me and Maul through winter. I ain't gonna go near no bear after that hole.
Jack was never one to make two trips to the creek when one would do. Well, Jack lit on out of town. He got about as far as the county line when he started yawning. He saw a great big mossy mound on the side of the road.
I need to catch me about 40 winks.
And he climbed up on top of the mound, and he went to sleep. Well, Jack, he had the goddamnedest dream. There was this big as a mountain, mean as a devil, hungry as a goat grizzly bear, and Jack was astride its humpy old back, except it was no dream. When Jack come full awake, he was holding on for dear life. That bear was bucking like a carnival ride. It was snarling and slapping its powerful arms ever which way, trying to get at Jack. Well, finally, the old bear commenced backing up, figuring to pin Jack against a sycamore tree. Well, bears, they don't have eyes in the back of their heads, thank goodness, so the grizzly couldn't see too well where it was going. It missed the sycamore and tumbled rump first into a dry well. Jack sprang onto a tree branch just in time. Well, you never heard such a commotion as that grizzly trying to get out of the well. Every time it clawed a few feet up, the stones would give way, and it would fall back down to the bottom. Yes, sir. Jack could feel that extra $100 in his pocket already.
I'm gonna head back to town and get it right now. Well, Mayor, afraid I didn't run into no grizzly bear, but I did come across a little yelpy cub. I played with it for a while, but then it wouldn't let me take a nap, so I just swatted it on down into an old dry well up yonder.
Well, let's take a look at that there, Jackie.
Just follow me.
All right. Phyllis, Jack, you sure are something, son.
I wouldn't say that, but I guess I am.
Well, here's your $100 reward. Why, Jackie, I'd be obliged if you'd take on one more varmint.
How obliged are we talking about there, Mayor?
$300 obliged.
Woo! That must be one ornery critter.
Well, you don't know the half of it. Remember when you first come through town?
Yeah, I smelled something real bad.
Yeah, well, that was a wild unicorn that just about run you over.
You're trifling with the truth?
No, sorry.
Come on.
No, that dad-blasted unicorn has got about 100 cows and nearly that many sheep and 2 or 3 old ladies, friends of mine, to boot.
Well, I'll see what I can do. But I figure it's going to cost you $500 cash money for me to get rid of that unicorn.
Well, I reckon that'd be a bargain.
All righty.
Well, Jack had heard tell of unicorns, but he had never come face to face with one. He didn't allow that now was the time to make any new acquaintances.
I'm getting out of here.
So old Jack just sauntered out of town and on down the road. Jack hadn't gone too far when he smelled something terrible. At first, he couldn't place it.
Well, that ain't no polecat. Ain't no rotten eggs neither. Sure ain't no three-day-old fish. I know that because my brothers done stuck some of those down my pants one day. Oh, that smelled all right.
Well, by the time Jack figured out where he had smelled that smell before, it was too late. Up ahead of him stood the wild unicorn, snorting out stinky breath and pawing the earth. It drawed a bead on Jack, pointed its dreadful horn at Jack, and charged. Jack never was one to run to the store when he could get there walking, but if he had to, that boy could burn a cyclone. Right now, he figured he had to jackal it out with the wild unicorn no more than a frog's hair behind. Jack and that unicorn, they ran to the middle of town and around the courthouse. Oh, Jack, don't worry, Fearless Jack. I'll save you with my 22. Hold on there, Jack. Well, as you might suspicion, the mayor wasn't much of a shot. She pulled the trigger, and the first bullet hit the wild blue yonder. She aimed and fired again, and this time it went catawampus in the dirt. The next bullet hit the church bell, ricocheted and hit the statue on the courthouse lawn, zinged over to the barber pole, rebounded once more, and hit that unicorn smack in the behind. By now, the unicorn had just about wore Jack out, and it was getting ready to gore him good. But getting shot in the behind threw the unicorn plumb off. It missed Jack altogether and stove its horn into a big oak tree instead, right up to the hilt. That wild unicorn bellowed so loud it started a rock slide on the mountainside, but try as it would, it couldn't pull out its horn. And finally, with all that thrashing, the horn broke clean off. And the unicorn, leastways what used to be a unicorn, hightailed it out of town like a whipped pup.
Now look what you done there, Mayor. Don't you know that unicorns, they're as rare as hen's teeth. Probably not more than a handful in the whole wide world. Why, if I'd wanted to, I could have killed that critter back there in the woods. But I was aiming to join the circus with it. I just about had it wore down where I could have rode it all the way when you started shooting and messing things up.
Oh, well, I'm powerful sorry, Phyllis Jack. I really am.
Well, I reckon you ought to pay me double to make up for the lost revenue I got now.
Oh, shucks. Well, I guess it's the least I could do.
That's $1,000. You better give it to me now.
Here you are, Phyllis Jack.
Oh, man, Mama's going to be so proud of me.
Well, as Jack was leaving, the mayor hollered after him.
Hey, Fearless Jack! Don't guess a fella like you needs to worry about that settlement of giants on the other side of the mountain.
Giants? Oh, no!
The night I heard the noise, I saw the fight. The watchman was a running around, crying, "Old Dan Tucker's come to town. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. You're too late to get your supper." Old Dan Tucker went to town, riding the goat and leading the hound. Hound gave a yell and the goat gave a jump. Left old Dan straddle up stump. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Dan built a rocket it to the sun. Folks said, you know, this can't be done. Well, Dan just laughed with all his might. What do you think? I'm crazy. I'm going at night. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Out of the way, old Dan Tucker. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker. You're too late to eat your supper. Dan went to the dock, and the dock said, son, take off your clothes, take out your tongue. Now stand by the window, and Dan asked why. Doc said, I'm mad at that neighbor guy. Get out of the way, old Dan Tucker.